Hello and welcome to Post-Ass Draft. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. Today we've got Beth Livingston, who's going to be talking to us all about project management. She told me as we were getting started that she is super passionate about project management, keeping the trains running on time and all the projects that she's in. Somebody's got to do that job, and we're super happy that she'll be joining us for that today. Before we get to the interview, let me tell you that this episode is brought to you by Sandhills Development. They've been a long-term, wonderful partner of PostStatus. No matter what you're working on with your WordPress website, Sandhills has a tool that can help you. You can sell digital products with easy digital downloads. Affiliate WP is an outstanding affiliate marketing solution. Sugar Calendar is event management made easy. And even WP Simple Pay for the simplest, lightweight Stripe solution that you can get to take payments. You can craft superior experiences with the ingenuity of Sandhills plugins. Thanks so much to Sandhills for being our partner. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. We're going to talk about everything that you have going on. Before we get to it, let's go ahead and knock out where people can find you, because sometimes we get to the end of the episode before we do that. WPRoadmaps.com is kind of your landing page for the things that you do, the academy that you put on. And there's a big button right there that says join the academy or try the free webinars, where people can see the things that you offer to your students. So I'm really glad that you're here. You're going to talk to us about project management today. Before we get to all the nitty-gritty details of project management, can you tell me first, who are you and how did you get into this space?
Okay, so I started life as a first grade teacher. You study things in school that you don't think are going to be your career, and life doesn't turn out that way. Over time, I moved into corporate training. Then I became an IT business analyst and project manager in corporate, mostly in the financial industry. And in 2009, I started a side business. Actually, I was just building websites for myself for some projects I had going on. And then I started doing it, it's like every WordPress agency, right? It kind of evolved, yeah. Started doing websites for other folks. And then I left corporate in 2016. And my whole shtick for my web agency was that not only would I build this website for you, but then I would teach you how to manage it. But that was before I realized that most clients really don't want to manage their own website, even if they think they do. Mm-hmm. Or they want you to cut the top of their head off and pour the knowledge in. They don't want to have to do any work for it. So, and then at the same time, I started going to WordCamps and kept hearing from all these folks about how they were struggling with scope creep and struggling with getting content from the client on time and getting the requirements right, then multiple revision cycles. And I'm thinking to myself, these are all the things we figured out how to do years ago in software development. And so I thought, well, I'll create some training. And so that is how the WP Project Managers Academy was spawned. And one reason, people have asked me, Beth, project management's project management. It doesn't really matter whether you're using WordPress or some other web development tool. Why did you specifically focus on WordPress? And it's because, number one, those are my people. And number two, as someone said about pre-COVID, in the before times, I knew where they were every single weekend.
Yeah.
So now it's a little different. Everything's gone virtual, but they're still my people, and I still try to go and hang out with them. But that's the WP Project Managers Academy is the only place on the web that teaches you to consistently get your projects completed on time, within budget, with the features that meet the client's business requirements without sacrificing your profit.
So let's talk about that, that claim that project management is project management and, WordPress project management isn't a lot different. How much different is it in your mind?
The biggest difference with WordPress that you don't have to consider with other projects is plugins. Mm. We have six principles of productivity for WordPress project success. And one of those is get the right resources involved. So that set of resources is somewhat different for WordPress projects than, say, for a straight HTML project or Wix project or something like that.
So who tends to be the ideal customer, I guess, for this type of academy? Is it the owner of an agency, or is it the project managers within an agency, or is it freelancers? Who do you
all
speak to the most?
All of the above. Right. Anybody that is struggling with things like scope creep, which for those who don't know what scope creep is, who might be listening, is you've defined your project as this, and it gradually grows to this and to this and to this. Mm-hmm. And you don't have a process in place for making sure that you get paid for every piece of work you do. And that's what scope creep is. And even large agencies that have been doing this for a long time are still struggling with it because they don't have a methodology in place to deal with it. I've solved that problem.
I don't want you to give away all the goods of what you offer in a paid course, but I give away a lot. Yeah. In terms of the parts that you do give away, like what are some of the things that tend to be like, why don't we actually say, what are the reasons people tend to get stuck with scope creep? Like, how do they get into that problem in the first place?
Mostly because they just want to be a nice guy or a nice girl. You know, I'll just, hey, that's going to take me 15 minutes. I'll just throw it in. And then the client expects that the next time and the next time and the next time. There's also something called gold plating, which is when you throw in a cool feature because you think it's cool, but the client never asked for it. That's another way that scope creep gets involved. Just anything that you've defined the scope, you've agreed on the scope, anything that falls outside that fence.
So this ends up inadvertently resetting expectations, I guess, for the client as they realize, like, hey, look what I got that I didn't ask for. That's a great service. And then they start to turn that into expectations instead of pleasant surprises.
Right. Right. So what I teach my students is you invoke your change. First of all, you have to have a good change control procedure, and then you invoke that without exception every single time. And this applies to already approved deliverables. So yeah. For those who might know project management, the big trendy thing that everybody talks about is Agile, right? I have found that Agile doesn't work for web development projects because you are actually building one thing on the next. If you start with a visual sitemap and then you move to wireframes and then you move to content, the wireframes are the boxes where all the content's going to go. And then you move to the actual content. We haven't even talked about design yet because we got to have all those things in place and one thing builds on the other. So it's really a waterfall framework for creating for a project management methodology for creating websites where one thing builds on the next. And so as each of those deliverables is approved, or as we like to call it, accepted, then any changes to that deliverable has to go through the change control process.
Is Agile development specifically in your mind not a good solution when it's fixed project pricing and scope? Like if someone's charging like on a weekly basis.
It's the mechanics of the way Agile works. You know, you've got to have this this stand-up meeting, or I forget what they call it.
Yeah, like for all the scrums and stuff.
Yeah. So then you've got a product owner who's really a business analyst. They just gave a different name to it. You know, every project management methodology is virtually the same. They just organize it different and give it different names. Yeah. So there's Six Sigma, there's CMM, which is not really, that's a capability maturity model. It's not really a project management methodology, but it's a method for managing the maturity of your software development process. So all of this is very, you know, this is the boring part of project management. But you don't need to know all that. You just need to know the processes that you need to have in place to control the things that we already know are probably going to go wrong.
So I could be mistaken. I'm not the world's best project manager, so this is helpful for me. In the situation where, you know, I realize I'm probably going to encounter some things in the project that I don't know today. You know, like that's the known unknowns. How do you account for those in your project management plan? Because if I'm not mistaken, that's kind of what Agile's trying to help fix, right? Is like to be able to help the project adapt to changes that occur in the process.
Right. And my biggest problem with Agile is they start building too early. They break it into a chunk and then they build that chunk and then they go to the next chunk. But the problem is, if you haven't planned out the whole thing, you're going to get to a chunk down the road where a new requirement's going to pop up, right? Somebody's going to say, oh, we forgot about X, right? Yeah. So the way that we handle that is we use a two-step proposal process. So, and a lot of people will say, well, and this is to handle the discovery, okay? Because you're going to find things in discovery. It's best to just acknowledge change and embrace it and explain to your client, look, we know things are going to change. We're not going to try to hide from that fact that we can't remember to ask every single thing. You can't remember to tell us every single thing. Later on, somebody might just have a better idea of the way to do things than we were going to do it. Maybe a plugin falls off the radar and you have to find a new one. You know, there's all kinds of things that are going to happen. So it's best to just plan for that and manage it. So one way we do that, especially with getting the requirements right, because our methodology is way heavy on planning. We don't even start development till phase three. So phase one is the deep dive discovery. So look, we've given the client a proposal, and when we give him the proposal, him or her, that is, we give it to him in a range, an estimate of a time range and a cost range based on that usually hour and a half pre-proposal meeting where you kind of got the details of what they wanted. If they agree to that range, then phase one becomes the deep dive discovery. And of course, all of our documentation with our proposal and our master services agreement explains this, that that is not a final carved in granite estimate. And we never use the word quote, because it's not a quote, it's an estimate always, because things are just going to change. So after, so we head into the deep dive discovery. At the end of the deep dive discovery, that client's been shoulder to shoulder with you as you've gone through the visual site map, the wireframes, the functional requirements, the technical requirements, the whole nine yards. So as things emerged, they knew, they saw it. And so when you get to the end of the deep dive, we create the statement of work. And in that statement of work, we include a more precise estimate. Notice I said more precise, not accurate, because there is no such thing as an accurate estimate. So I'm kind of big on words too. And if we're careful with our words, we can avoid setting improper expectations with the client. So if that next estimate falls within the range that I initially gave them, then we just move on to phase two, which is design and preparation, which is more planning, actually. Yeah. But if it does exceed it, then I give the client the option to cancel, because the deposit that I got covers all of that first phase, at least.
Okay, that was going to be what
I've been paid for it. And then I can just hand over that that's a complete website specification that's done at that point. And I can just hand it over to them and they can go see if they can get somebody to do it cheaper.
So that deposit is essentially paying for the discovery process plus the specifications that come out of the discovery process.
Correct.
So instead of having a conversation of do you charge for discovery, you take a deposit before you do any of it. And if they back out, they have in fact paid for discovery. But if they do not, then the deposit.
We just move on because we're already, they agreed in our contract that if the next estimate still falls within that range, we're still good to go and we just continue on.
Gotcha.
And one reason I did that, one reason I don't like to do discovery as a separate project like some people do, is because it does make it too easy for the client to leave. Mm-hmm. If you're already under contract and it's just going to be easier to stay with you than to rehash all of this with somebody else, then that's the reason that we couched it that way.
So even though it's pretty similar, I guess, in terms of what's actually happening, the way it feels a little more painful if you're not receiving a deposit back if you go with someone else, versus if you're entering it thinking this is a fixed amount for discovery and, you know, there's no attachment to where there's no like pain point for going elsewhere. So you essentially get that scope for free and probably going to end up charging less for that discovery, whereas you're going to have a little bit more leeway in terms of what you're going to put forward in terms of a deposit.
Because yeah, and feel sometimes, like sometimes that deposit is more than 50% of the project total.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the work is actually done. I mean, let's face it, building a WordPress website, if you have all the pieces and parts ready, all the plugins are defined, everything's just kind of up on a bookshelf for you to pull off and put together, it doesn't take very long.
Yeah.
The part that takes a long time is figuring out the solution and making sure all of that works together.
Yeah, that makes sense. How do you differ your processes when there's more custom development? Like, you know, somebody's digging into the code of the project a lot more versus they're doing, I always call that kind of wrangling, you know, like where there's less like digging into the theme and custom plugins and things like that.
Yeah, I call that outsourcing.
Okay.
I am not a super tech. I am a person that understands how to build a website using the tools that WordPress and the plugin developers and the theme developers give us. When it comes to coding, I know I need to learn CSS top to bottom, but I just don't love it. I learned early in my career, I'm not a programmer. My first class in graduate school was called Programmed Instruction. And this was a master's degree in instructional design. And now keep in mind, this was back in the day where those computers had two floppy drives in them. There was no hard drive. It was a long time ago. And I was terrified when I went into that class, and I had no idea what that was all about. And now I forget why I even brought that up. What was your question right before that?
Just the outsourcing versus.
That's when I learned I wasn't a programmer, because one of the things we had to do is we did have to do some programming in BASIC. Now, I don't know if you're a programmer, but BASIC, you write 27,000 lines of code and it draws a box.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very cumbersome language and it was very difficult to learn. But I think programmers, people who code well, think differently than, say, someone like me. So, we'll do the custom development. In fact, I'm working on a project right now that's probably going to need some custom development. We're not far enough along yet where I know for sure that WooCommerce doesn't do what I need it to do, and we may have to have some customization to that. And I will generally find a developer to help me with that.
Gotcha. And then in the project management framework, when you do need that custom development, how do you build in those uncertainties of that development process to the overall project?
Oh, well, we scope that out. I mean, we do that as part of the website spec. So that's it. Still in the planning phase, still in the deep dive discovery, because after phase one, I'm going to take a drink of this water. Just one second.
Yeah, that's fine. And I appreciate you letting me dig into all these specifics of the project management phase.
No, this is great. I talk about this stuff publicly all the time. What people get in the academy that they don't get from just maybe one of my talks or something is all the templates and the downloads and the done for you language and all of the stuff that you need to kind of get this stuff ramped up, as well as, you know, more detailed instruction.
Right.
But what was the last question?
So scoping the custom development.
Oh, right. So we scope that out as part of the deep dive, because it's the next phase, which is after the deep dive discovery, our next phase is design and preparation. And that's where you're preparing your staging environment. You're pulling all the plugins together. You're doing any other planning that you need to do for customization. So hopefully we're hiring a developer who knows that they can code this a certain way to make this certain thing happen. It's not just a, well, let me see if this works, or let me see if that works, which is what I do sometimes with plugins. Yeah. Does this going to work? I don't know. But I tell people this all the time. The requirements, the business requirements of your client should be your uppermost, always top of mind thing that you're thinking about. You know, a lot of people start these discovery sessions with, well, tell me the websites that you like. Tell me the websites you don't like. Tell me what you like about what you don't. I don't care what you like. I want to know what your website is supposed to do for you. How are you using it as a marketing tool? I always quote Jason Resnick here with, your website is not art. Mm-hmm. We want it to be beautiful, but it's not art. It is there to accomplish a business objective. And so we focus very heavily on the business objectives, and our design and branding and styling and all that is the very last thing that we do.
How much is that a surprise to the customer? Like when you're trying to explain this is what the process will be, are they taken aback by, hey, when do I get to see something? Or are you just going
to
keep hitting?
No, because they get to see a lot during that planning phase. It's just not a website or pictures. Well, wireframes are kind of pictures. They're black and white, but they're pictures.
Yeah.
They know that stuff is going on. Stuff is happening. We think that clients are going to get annoyed by that because we know how the how most people do the process. And so we think they're going to push back. Most clients don't have a clue as to what order things should be done. And it's part of our job, setting those client expectations, to educate them. You know, if you educate them on why you have to have that change control process and why you're acknowledging change and not trying to act like you have some sort of crystal ball, and that you can tell them everything after an hour and a half, exactly how much this website's going to cost and exactly how much time it's going to take, that's ludicrous. It just is.
When you're setting up plans for these projects, what kind of expectations do you set for the design? So you mentioned, you know, Jason Resnick saying, you know, it's not art. Do you have projects where there's a designer that's going to kind of lay out exactly what it should look like? Or are you putting the presentation layer together when you're actually getting the site together? You know, is there a visual only preview at some point?
Well, as we're building these pieces and we move on to the functional and the technical, and then we get to styling and branding, at that point, we might start talking about what things you like and don't like. You know,
okay, but you're getting the actual functionality of the website in operation before you get to the stylistic.
Correct.
Elements.
Because they say, you know, content should drive the design. Well, content's not the only thing that should drive the design. Your functional requirements, you know, how much, like I've got a client right now that right now they are with their furniture store and they just have a catalog site. So you can't purchase anything online. They're going to be adding WooCommerce to their site. How is that going to look? Well, they said, well, can we just, because they really need filters.
Yeah.
Product filters is what they need. Well, that's kind of built into some, to either WooCommerce or the extensions of WooCommerce. And so it doesn't make sense for us to build that without putting putting WooCommerce in there. But they may decide to, because there is a way to use WooCommerce as a straight catalog site. They might decide to do that first until they get some of their other business processes that are going to have to change ironed out. So all of that, in that particular client, that's a website redesign. And for that particular client, we added a whole new deliverable that we haven't done before, which is a business process analysis document, because they've got all these issues about the in-store POS system and selling online and how are those things going to talk to each other, that did not come up in the initial meeting, because the initial meeting was, we just want to add a store. And then as we moved into the deep dive, that's when we found out, well, we really need it to talk to this other system so we can keep track of our inventory. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did.
I have to tell you that I did not sleep a lot last night. So if I can't I get to the end of the answer and then I can't remember what you asked me, please forgive me.
That's
sign
fine.
Of
just
not enough sleep and I'm really old.
I just think it means you're digging into something and giving us the true alpha there of your knowledge managing these projects, especially when it, you know, goes into a story. I always love that. You uncovered something there that I think is going to be a really important point. To limiting the unknowns of a project. Almost every project I've ever worked in, whether there's been a part of the project where you tell the customer, hey, we're custom developing something or not, like you said, they probably won't know, won't care. If you're custom developing every element, you do have some of that control to lead with design and build out the functionality, but you're almost certainly going to have this higher likelihood of scope creep as the functionality becomes more difficult to customize because it's trying to follow design. I feel like you eliminate, based on what you just said, so many problems when you lead with functionality and then you skin that functionality from a design perspective and you undo many of these uncertainties, because
Exactly. Yeah. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
How many times, if you really wanted an item or a thing and you landed on the website, did you leave because it was ugly?
I don't think you really want the item.
I'm
often critical, but I think I just maybe turn my nose up a little bit, but I still buy it.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Amazon is one of the ugliest websites on the planet. They don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
Yes, the design is important, and I certainly don't want to downplay the importance of the user experience. That is very important, and it needs attention, but it doesn't need to be the first thing that you do, and it needs to be towards the end, because that whole user experience is going to be driven by the functionality.
I can't tell you. I mean, I've worked at multiple agencies. We've always led with design. We've always led with that. The client sees what it will look like before they see the site in practice. And many times my late nights as the developer, my role in these projects from sales and then development, and that design layer in the middle between the sale and the development has kept me up at night many times.
Exactly. Because it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah. I think you really are onto something there, and I bet 90% of projects lead with the design or the view of the site.
Always. You go search and Google, there's a ton of them out there, the 30 questions you should ask in a discovery meeting or whatever. They always start with that. What websites do you like? What websites do you not like? I do care. I just don't care at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. When you're doing the project management phase, how do you deal with what the client thinks they want or how they talk about what they want, and then you translate that into what they actually need? So when you're doing the discovery and they start saying something, and you turn that into what actually the solution is, and then you regurgitate it back, but it's what you know they need, not what they think they need.
A lot more review cycles on paper than you think you're going to need. My brother carries this note in his wallet, and every time he and his wife have an argument, he takes it out and he says, "Let me tell you what I think you said, and then you tell me what you really meant." And it's the same thing with the client, right? After you've had a meeting with them and you document everything, you can do it with meeting minutes. You can do it with, if there's a document that you're working on, you can take out a section of that document and say, "Okay, this is what I think we decided. Let me know that this is correct before we move on." Right. In fact, I had a meeting this morning with that furniture store client, and that's exactly what we did. We went through and asked questions about, because they do things unlike any other furniture store. And so there have to be certain things put in place. But they're, now that they're adding on, an online store, some of those processes have to change. But the owner of the company, it happens to be a woman and her daughter that own the company, they are the ultimate decision makers. Now, usually I get really frustrated when we're in a situation like this where I'm actually dealing with the COO and the marketing director who's external to the company. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes down to the final decisions about certain things they know she's really picky about, I have to run those by her. And so that's exactly what we did. This is what I think I was told. Tell me, do you want to keep this process in place, or do you see the value in changing it and moving forward and being more modern?
I like that a lot. So you're just talking there about who are the stakeholders. In that case, there's an external marketing company. There's two people at least that are involved with the main company. I wrote a blog post forever ago. I don't even remember what year, probably 2014, talking about this principle that I've developed when I was having to quote projects, and I called it the client multiplier. And the number one thing that impacted that multiplier was how many stakeholders are involved. Is this like the entire board of a nonprofit, the entire C-suite of a company? And the more people, it's like add 10% for every single one of them.
I like that. Just add 10% more to your estimate because there's an extra person involved.
Yeah.
In this particular case, it's a little different because I and personal acquaintances with the COO and the marketing director, which is why they called me in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you something funny. I met them in a bar.
Nice.
We were actually at a fundraiser and we just started chatting, and she's in marketing. I do websites. We started talking about how that goes together. This had to be at least 3 to 4 years ago. So when they had this website redesign that they wanted to do, they called me. And but it's structured so I do have one point of contact that is the final decision maker, and that's the COO. So he can overrule her. He just doesn't want to.
Yeah. So how do you vet that person if they're the decision maker or they're the liaison to you, but it turns out they don't have as much control as you hoped they did on their end? You know, like,
well, I ask a lot of questions in that first meeting. Mm. And I tell them that I will not work for multiple people, that I have to have one point of contact who can make those decisions. And I also ask who's signing the check. I do, because ultimately that is your ultimate stakeholder. Yeah. Not the person in HR who writes the check, but, you know, who is actually signing the check, because that is your ultimate stakeholder. You might be the whole project kind of reporting. Well, one thing I do is that I establish a project sponsor. In my proposal, I cover the roles and responsibilities. Now, a lot of people think that means, you know, it's just me and the client and maybe a couple of people on the client or a couple of people on my team. The roles and have nothing to do with how many people there are, because if you're even a single, this goes a long way towards educating your client on what's actually involved in building a website, because you're listing yourself as the business analyst, you're listing yourself as the project manager, you're listing yourself as the designer, as the developer, as the tester. If you're a solopreneur, you're filling all of those roles. And so by listing them out separately with what the responsibilities are, that sets that expectation. The other thing is, by doing that also for the client side, like, here's what the project sponsor does. Here's what the project manager does. The project manager is typically you, but then you have to explain that relationship. So the project sponsor is the one who is really, most commonly, the project sponsor is the one, if you're dealing with a corporation or a big company, is the one that is championing the project. That makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. And I love the idea of putting those hats on people and like forcing them to wear them in some way, whether that's you internally or them on their side. I've done similar before. So, and talking about earlier when I was saying the client multiplier and some of that stuff, what I have asked people before, which did make it work a little better, was essentially asking them, like, if they're not the person signing the check, so like in that scenario where you don't have that, you essentially ask them to be your advocate within their organization, right? Because you tend to wear multiple hats. If you're working with a client, but then you're talking to your team, you're kind of defending the client. But then when you're talking to the client, you're defending their team, team, you know? And you got, exactly. If you ask the person who is your primary point of contact to do that within their organization, but you ask them specifically, like, hey, we're on the same page. Now we have to go be on the same team when you take this back to the people signing the check.
Right. I agree.
What other tips do you have from a people management perspective and the role that plays in project management? Because I know it's not all just processes and documents. It ends up being about people. So what are the things that you run into dealing with people?
Two things. Be brutally honest with your client about the pitfalls of most projects, but only if you have processes in place to address those things. Like the content bottleneck, right? We know that is getting content for your client from your client is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. So share that with the client and then explain to them how you're going to keep that from happening. And in most cases, that's incentivize them to meet their dates and give them penalties for not meeting the dates. Sorry, I thought I had my phone turned off. One second.
That's
okay.
No problem.
Tell me the question again. I got distracted by my phone.
How you deal with people.
People. Okay. So I'll give you an example from today. The president of this company is a woman and she's about my age. Her daughter is about my daughter's age. So I knew that she is very proprietary about the first website that they built. And she had some very distinct ideas about the way things needed to be done and the way people shop. And so what I did was I educated her, but I didn't educate her about, like, now here are the facts. I said, you know, you are so wise to be adding this e-commerce to your website, because you know that things have changed dramatically over the last 18 years. And you know this, and you've done this, you know, and so it's so great that you're willing to accept these, to embrace these changes to the way we've always done business. You know, like when you and I were young, the way advertisement was, you know, just that sort of thing by empathizing with where they are, but you're also setting the stage for where you want them to go, which I really want to update and modernize this website. And we're going to, it was built in a custom theme. We're going to use, I just have to say this. Back in the day, Microsoft would put out a whole bunch of stuff with bugs in it. They knew it had bugs in it, but they wanted the user base to find the mistakes, because it was much easier to fix that way. And so that's kind of my attitude about today's environment. And now, why was I telling you the Microsoft story? I feel like I'm on drugs.
I felt like you were about to go to Gutenberg or talk about.
Oh, that's exactly it. I'm one of the last people that's delved into the block editor. And part of that has to do with I follow Nathan Ingram. Do you know him?
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Fellow Birmingham resident.
Oh, you're in Birmingham.
Yeah, that's
okay.
What I was asking
well,
about
Brian, earlier. That's so we've met. I knew you looked familiar. Did you? So were you at that WordCamp where I was?
Yeah, I probably was.
So your name looked real familiar, but I could not figure out where I knew you from. Okay. So, Nathan. So I follow Nathan, and Nathan has been dragging his feet about the block editor. He's been toying with it more than I have. But now that iThemes has acquired Cadence, mm-hmm. I am all in, because this Cadence theme and the Cadence blocks and a lot of what they offer is going to help me with this existing client that I have right now. And based on the site speed from using the block editor instead of the page builders, I've been an Elementor lover forever, but I mean, I have a version of Elementor they don't even sell anymore at a ridiculously low rate, because I jumped in early on. I'm jumping into that. And that was actually the answer to a previous question.
Yeah, that's good. So I think I'd like to finish just with learning more about, what are some of the pitfalls that people come into your coursework and your coaching, like the common things that they just have all wrong and that you just knock out with that, you know, this first.
Well, the biggest one is scope creep. And even Nathan, after doing this for 25 years, has now added a change budget to his process. And the way the change budget works is, remember we gave that estimate in the proposal with the range. Then we say, look, we know there's going to be change, but rather than try to pad the estimate, which we never do, because you can't measure that. You don't know what went wrong. You can't figure out where that money went. We use a change budget. So we take about anywhere from 20 to 30% of the entire estimate. And we say, all right, you have to agree to put this invisible money in this invisible bucket. And it's only going to be used for change.
Yeah.
And so that is probably, I always tell people that the change budget is a magic bullet for controlling scope creep. That and the change control procedure, because sometimes you need to change the timeline. It doesn't really change the cost. But you still need to invoke that change control procedure so that every single change is documented. That way, when you go back and look at it, it gives you a path for continuous improvement.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then finally, so I'm on your website. The folks that are watching this, if they are, they would be able to see this. But can you tell us what are the various options, ways people can join? I see you have a basic free membership and a premium membership. What should potential students expect when they're?
Well, one reason I have the free membership is because we're WordPress people. We need a free option. We want to try it before we buy it. Always, right? So in the free option, you can learn everything you need to know about project management, about the change budget, about the change control process, controlling the content collection process. And I give you lots of templates and downloads. The premium version has a whole lot more already done for you. So it gets more of the fast track, as well as we have lessons from industry experts on all those things around project management. Because let's face it, you can't manage projects if you don't have any. So all that stuff that happens on the front end about selling and pricing and all of that sort of stuff, we have lessons about that. Client management, Nathan teaches a lesson about, he's the king of client management. All the stuff that happens afterwards, like recurring revenue, care plans, Google My Business, all of those things that you can put in place to generate those streams of income. We have lessons from industry experts on that inside the academy, as well as ongoing curated content. I'm doing a case study of this current client that I'm doing right now. I'm giving documents of, here are things that aren't in our regular methodology, but I had to create for this client to show people that, yes, I give you a project plan for creating a website. I give you a methodology, but all of that needs to be customized for every client, because not every client needs everything, or they might need something extra that isn't normally part of the process.
Yeah.
Like this business process analysis that I'm doing for this client.
You brought up something there, and I just want to ask you about it before we go, because it's about these additive services. One of the things that I feel like I see with businesses is that they want solutions to like help their web presence. And a lot of times web developers, that's what they say they are. They're a web developer. They're just here for your this little slice that's your WordPress website, the presentation and the development or whatever of that. And they're basically missing all this other part, all these other parts of the pie that they're often capable of performing those consulting services as well, sometimes end up doing it for free. How do you help people, or do you recommend people like expand their scope, like things like you just mentioned, Google My Business and some other parts of helping a business be better online? How do you get them involved in that stuff?
All of the guest instructors have either a course or a membership or a Facebook group or somewhere that you can go to learn about those things. I think those things are really personal based on what you want to do. I mean, you can't do them all. Okay. If you want to be an agency that offers all of that, one single person can't do that. So sure. We have Brad Morrison from GoWP talking about outsourcing. Because a lot of times that's the solution. I intend to outsource some of the development of this project I'm working on now. I don't know how that's going to happen because we haven't finished planning the project yet. I don't know what all is going to be needed. So then I'll know which type of developer that I may need to hire, or maybe not. We'll just have to see. So those people point people to all those different directions. Also, we have a Facebook group called WordPress Project Management. And in that Facebook group, we do a live training every Monday. We live stream it not only to the group, but we also live stream it to my business Facebook page. And then on Friday, we have a chat that people can log into a Zoom call. And then we kind of follow up with any additional questions about that live training. And I'll bring guests on. Like this week I had Trisha Clements all about Google My Business. And, you know, Google My Business has gotten complicated. It's not as easy as you think it is.
Everything Google's complicated to me.
Yeah, it is. It is. Google's really getting everything's complicated. But so I try to provide resources for folks to decide which of these things are right for you. You know, everybody should have a system for offering care plans, in my opinion. But other than that, the other services that you may offer, like SEO or ongoing web audits and things like that, that's a personal decision based on what you like. I don't think anybody should be doing things they don't like to do.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Beth, I think we'll leave it there. If people want to catch up with what you offer, they can do so at wproadmaps.com. And if they want to connect with you socially, you've mentioned Facebook or Twitter. What are the best places to do that?
Yeah, I'm at WP Roadmaps on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me in the Facebook group on Facebook. Just search on WordPress Project Management. We are the only one. But then you have to click on the groups tab so you see only groups. Or you can always email me at beth@wpredmaps.com if you got any specific questions. I monitor that email address myself, and I answer every email.
Awesome. Thanks for being here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Go to postas.com/sandhills to check out Sandhills Development and all the products that they offer. And it's been a pleasure having you. Thanks, Beth, for joining us. Go to postas.com if you want to learn more about PostStatus and what we offer with the PostStatus Club. It's been a privilege to be with you here today. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye.